Who's got it better than us?
Nobody!
Robert is being chased, thrown on the run, and it is caught! Touchdown, Keenan Allen! What a great...
My goal is not to break you. My goal is to make you harder to break.
Comes back, number six! Number six!
Huge sack by Joey Bosa.
Yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
Picked off at the 8-yard line by Derwin James.
Sets his speed, takes a shot downfield, has Knighton. Caught! Touchdown, Chargers!
Grab your lunch boxes and go attack this day with an enthusiasm unknown to mankind.
Is it the dawn of a new era as Chargers fans? Are the calls for Justin Herbert in the MVP race too soon, right on time, or overdue? Did anyone else have a complete heart attack sitting through that game? Whew! Los Angeles Chargers hold on to win 34-27 over the Cincinnati Bengals, surviving a second-half comeback attempt from Joe Burrow and co. There's plenty to get stuck into tonight. You are consuming the Thunder Down Under Chargers football podcast, and welcome. It's your host, Andy, and he's back. The new puppy himself, my co-host Alistair. It is great to have you back, mate.
It's great to be back. Great to be back with the listeners. Unfortunately, no Jack. So as I dip in, he dips out with a late bout of sickness. But we'll get the three of us together again very soon, listeners. I'd like to say I'm feeling fresh and energized, but you know, with a two-week-old, unlikely. But I was listening to your shows the last couple of weeks. You know, I was watching the games. I think the team and the podcast are firing on all cylinders. I might share a little story. When I was at the hospital, the night after Imogen was born, I was sitting there listening to a Harbaugh press conference, and I was just, you know, probably still in an emotionally exhausted state, but he was saying, you know, who's got it better than us? Nobody. And I just sat and I thought, who's got it better than us? Who's got it better than us at the minute on TDU, man? I mean, all of us, we got three beautiful young kids. We got loving, supporting, supportive partners. We're doing well professionally. We love our jobs. We love this show. Our listeners have never been more engaged, and it's growing and growing. And now we finally got a football team to match it, playing prime time games, meaningful games, winning them, not crumbling. So who's got it better than us? Maybe someone who, you know, isn't woken up multiple times per night getting 2 hours sleep. But who's got it better than us? Nobody.
Amen to that, brother. Guys, if you are new to the YouTube channel, believe it or not, both Al and I had hair before Sunday Night Football Showdown. But in all earnest, to the listeners and viewers, just to follow on from what Al is saying, thanks heaps for your continued support. The comments really means a lot. It does help that the Chargers are now on a 4-game win streak, and wins equals people want to listen to shows talking about the team's wins. So there you have it. Week 11's in the books. Chargers are sitting 7-3, 4 wins in a row. Bengals staring down the barrel of another year without playoffs. But look, their 4-7 record doesn't really do them much justice, which is why there was always the potential for the fight back, man. I kind of want to start you off with a leading question, just make it easy for you on your podcast return. Relating back to the first sentence I uttered, is it the dawn of a new era as Chargers fans? The team survived a comeback. Is the Jacksonville game behind us now? What does it speak to the culture of the team?
Can we give it one more week? I don't want to do the fence sitting stuff. I do want to just acknowledge that Lady Luck has a way of getting involved in these games. Two Evan McPherson missed field goals late in the game. A missed opportunity for an interception by Mike Hilton with a minute 43 remaining. So the Bengals bungled, dare I say it, and did enough to keep us in the game. But what I will say is different, and you saw this on Mic'd Up. Tooley was mic'd up this week. There is an infectious energy around this football team on the sidelines. Everyone is passionate, engaged. They seem to have a belief in each other and the coaching staff. So if you continue to give Herbert or the defense, which is still number one in the NFL, opportunities late in games to win, I'm now confident we'll blow the door down. And what did Herbert do at the end of that game, man? 40-something seconds left, four-play drive, two deep strikes to McConkey. That's not the old Chargers. That's a new era, and they embody the belief of their coaches.
So ultimately, in a roundabout way, your answer is yes. It is a new era. It's a new feeling. It's a new vibe. Monkey's off the back. Nah, I do agree with you. I'm far more hesitant than just, well, you know, we watched the game together. You saw me. I was cleaning dishes. I almost launched a milk bottle through the kitchen window. It was
you almost stopped watching. There were points where I'm like, Eddie, the ball's about to be snapped. And you're like, you're in the other room.
I'm doing play by play.
I'm filling in for Tirico. I'm like, in the gun, offset eye. Andy.
I can't deal right now. Yeah, look, like you said, I think we kind of saw, look, Herbert was phenomenal in that last 45 seconds or whatever it was. But we really experienced two polar opposites of the man himself. 10 of 13 for 183 yards and two TDs over that first half. Had an additional 59 of his 65 total rushing yards on three attempts. And, mate, what happened in the second half?
Well, first, what a cracking game. I mean, I think everyone was not sitting totally comfortably at halftime. When you've got Joe Burrow on the other side, my God, he's a fucking good quarterback. I'm sorry. He got so hot in the third quarter and the start of the fourth. He's evading sacks. He's running around, making off-platform throws, just doing that first down signal. And you started thinking, oh, man, we've seen this before. The Chargers offense has not done very well in second halves. What I would say, though, is having gone through the tape and a rewatch, I don't know if schematically the Bengals did too much differently. They were still heavily relying on their nickel personnel. They were still rushing 4 and 5. There was a famous AFC title game where Lou Anarumo against the Chiefs started rushing only 3 and dropping 8 into coverage, which scrambled Mahomes. I don't think they did that in this game. I think predominantly this game came down to skill and execution mistakes from the Chargers. As you said, man, Herbert missed a few throws that he either put it in front of the receiver or sailed it over the top of McConkey. And then this is where it shows up when you don't really have marquee wide receivers. I counted no fewer than 6 opportunities to complete passes that were missed, whether it was Quentin Johnston, Disley, Palmer had one. So when you just don't execute it on offense, the Bengals caught fire and you ended up with this kind of tight game right at the end. I'll throw a question back to you. One thing, though, that can be said is it was passing strange that Greg Roman, in the second half, with a major lead, decided to have a pass-run ratio of 24 passes to 11 runs in the second half. What did you think about that strategically?
It seemed like a weird decision to not want to maintain possession of the ball, maintain control of the ball on offense. What was also very interesting, obscure, where did Gus Edwards go? 11 snaps for the whole game. I think he did tweak an injury on his return against the Titans, but from what I understand, Harbaugh said, nope, just a personnel, you know, decision. It seemed like the use of Quentin Johnson was a bit odd. We've seen him obviously grow in all of his skill sets this year. He's 5th in the league for receiving touchdowns, which is an incredible stat. But there seemed to be a lot of desperation, go ball kind of usage, you know, deep left, deep right. And what you said, a couple of missed opportunities, a couple of bobbled catches. There was almost an interception chance on one of those right down near the goal line as well. So it seemed like I find it really hard to put my finger on what the sort of mentality and what the design idea, I guess, from Greg Roman was.
I think fans are split on this. You'll have the more conservative fans who will say, what the hell are you doing? You've got it. What was the lead at halftime? Remind me, 16 points, 18 points?
24 to 6.
Yeah. So 18 points. It's a 3-score game. You want to be striking that balance between milking clock, maintaining drives, and it gives the opposition confidence when you're going 3 and out, passing the ball, no times off the clock. That's one view. You've wanted to be the smash mouth team, come out and assert your will and break their back. The other side, though, says play action was really working, guys. Herbert might have had one of the best halves of his career. You've got Justin Herbert. Drive the nail into the coffin. Drive the stake into the heart by coming out and doing what you're doing in the first half. So tell us what you think, listeners, in the comments. Do you feel better knowing that Greg Roman is prepared to be that aggressive, even with a lead? Or do you think this is another example where in the second half,
Greg Roman has let the team down. Where do you land on that question?
Yeah, it's funny because if some of those errant throws had come off, we could be talking about a colossal, monumental blowout, right? But, you know, flogging a dead horse, it kind of felt like a little bit when it wasn't working. Sort of, don't take the ball out of his hands. The guy's on fire, but, you know, support him with a run game. What I think, although schematically Lou Anarumo didn't sort of change up too much in terms of excess numbers in coverage, he did drop a spy into the middle of the field, which he wasn't doing in the first half, which, you know, when Herbert, when the routes broke down, coverage was solid. It allowed Herbert to sneak up and like I said, 59 yards of his 65 came in the first half when that middle of the field was kind of unguarded. So
how good was that to watch? Sorry, just quickly, man. Can we see this every week now that Herbert's going to be Josh Allen?
Yeah, it's getting a bit like that. Just, I think I said it while we were watching, man. He just doesn't quite do the sort of crazy bonehead things that Allen does, which is good because he's Allen's got a few extra kegs on him. But yeah,
I thought you were going to say a few extra chromosomes. But what I also want is that Herbert. I hope he does not lose confidence as a result of that fumble. I know it was in field goal range, but that was very unlucky, man. It was essentially a guy's knee that forced the ball out. So hopefully he you know, I'm sure he'll learn from it, but I'd hate it if that was cause for him to suddenly lose confidence in his skills.
Hmm. Well, obviously it didn't because, you know, he, you know, came out in that last drive and lit it up. So, yeah, great. Look, anything more? I mean, McConkey keeps going from strength to strength. Will Disley, you know, maybe Jack called it. Maybe Will Disley will be the at least the most receptions for the Chargers this year. Another impressive game. I think 4 catches, 80 yards, touchdown. Just smarts. While we're still on offense, actually, I will say there was some very cluey behavior from Greg Roman, from Herbert, the way that the play was designed. A couple of times, McConkey went on just a sort of out route. I think it came off early in the game. Late in the game, Mike Hilton came across, undercut the route, did well. On that last drive, out route again, McConkey shoots up the field, and they just waited for Hilton to bite on that route over the top, and that was pretty much sayonara. The smarts to get out of bounds on his second catch, and then what was interesting was the discussion that Dobbins reported having with his running back, with the running back's coach, about if I break free, can I score? And
yeah,
there was, because when it was happening, I thought, oh, is that the right move to run it in? 18 seconds left, almost proved to be, it was enough time for Joe Burrow to move the ball down the field and have a crack at the end zone. But yeah, I was kind of clamoring for go down at the one. You don't want to rely on the kicker, even though Cam Dick is pretty solid, more solid than not. But look, ultimately, it really meant that the pressure was right on Cincy to then have to go down and score a touchdown rather than get into field goal position and try and rely on Evan McPherson again.
And maybe in the NFL, the fact that we've seen 2 games in 2 weeks in a row with a blocked field goal late in the game, that would be a reason why perhaps you just go in and score. One thing on what you mentioned, Will Disley, what is refreshing about this coaching regime, I feel like we're not seeing consecutive weeks in a row with the same mistake being made for the most part. We'll get to one where that was happening for a while in a second. But Will Disley dropped a catch down the seam the other week. And this one, it was like, you're going to give me another opportunity with a free look. I can suddenly catch over my shoulder. Maybe he was practicing with Herbert during the week, but that he's been a very nice find. Probably a top 10 tight end in the NFL this season when you think about the combination of blocking and receiving and everything else. So he's been a great pickup. We'd be remiss not to mention, Andy, the offensive line.
Phenomenal game.
Possibly really? Best of the season, man. Yeah, possibly best of the season.
I agree. Across the board, yeah, really good.
Do you reckon I can claim victory in the little stoush between Jack and me, him saying, oh, I don't know, reckon this is a fatal flaw. We keep missing twists and stunts, which is true. but not this week. No free rushes, no slot blitzes getting through unabated to Herbert. No twists and stunts through Zion and Bozeman's side. And Herbert was pressured only 16.3% of his dropbacks. Yeah. And we're learning, if you keep Herbert clean, the man's a machine.
Yep. Yep. Slater did lose a couple. Trey Hendrickson's a great edge rusher.
Yep.
BJ Hill going out of the game kind of midway through did help for the interiors. But look, you know, as Jack always says, man, you can only play against who you're up against, or whatever he waffles on about on that front. So look, they did a great job. Joe Alt and Ladd McConkey, just for the record, in week 11, two of the top seven ranked rookies in the league. So, 1-2 hit. Hortiz it's just looking better and better the more that these guys grow. Awesome stuff. Throw to you for the defense, man.
All right. Where do we start? Maybe I'll start with the key positive, I think, which was we talked about the importance of getting pressure on Burrow with a spread offense with no Khalil Mack. 36 pressures on Burrow at a rate of 44%. Now, I would say the next step needs to be converting some of those pressures into sacks. I think four of them ended up being sacks of the 36. And maybe that's where Khalil Mack being there makes that difference. But it felt like guys were firing, playing with a lot of confidence, giving very little early downs in the running game. I know you mentioned, Andy, we haven't talked about it that often, but the linebacking core for the Chargers is just about the best group in the whole team at the minute.
Yeah. Who would have thought, right? Definitely said this to you during the game, but that's now one position group that you kind of don't have to worry about, because the way that Henley's flying around, Denzel Perryman is a human missile. Made a great open field tackle on Jamar Chase, and he's incredibly hard to bring down when he's, you know, got the ball and he's in motion. Awesome. Amazing support to a defensive line that, you know, Joey Bosa is obviously not 100%. Khalil Mack's not playing, but the interior is playing some great football. Oh. Puna Ford and Taya Tart, some of their get-offs, the speed at which those big men, like there's a tackle for loss near the goal line, what Puna Ford got through for a sack, relentless. And Tuli Tuipulotu is just on fire, absolute fire. So it's great to see him record a sack and a half. Derwin James getting in on the action as well. I know you want to talk about him a bit later, but I was impressed by Cam Hart, I got to say, for the most on both Higgins and Jamar. Unlucky on that touchdown. I mean, you just, you know, man coverage on that in route near the goal line. What are you going to do? But otherwise, five tackles, two passes broken up.
Played really well.
Doing great.
I think that's where you start to turn the conversation into the areas they can improve. But to build on what you said, the way Henley and Perryman are complementing each other is just sensational. Perryman is setting that tone early, is that, you know, the early down thumper. He sees it so much quicker than he used to when he was a second round pick in his first stint with the team. He can't be physically quicker, right? He's about 9 or 10 years older than when he was drafted. But it's a position where if your eyes see it quickly, your body gets there earlier, and he just does it excellently. And Deion Henley, probably the play of the game, the critical 3rd and 10 on the Bengals' penultimate drive, he gets a pressure. Firstly, he fakes to drop into coverage. Then he pulls the other way as a spy, follows and chases Burrow out of the pocket, just pressures him. T. Higgins is by himself at the first down marker.
Yeah.
There's a 1:10 remaining. Ball falls short. If that's completed, the game probably goes the other way. Bengals probably slowly matriculated down the field, get in a field goal range, possibly score and win. So Henley's just gone from strength to strength. I don't think we've seen a D-line like this, at least since we've been fans of the team. And it's deep as well. People roll in like Morgan Fox, and even Matlock, when he plays his handful of snaps, will get a run stop or two. It's just sensational. So there's not, I don't know if there's too much to really work on the defense when there's, you know, the number one scoring defense in the league. But this was the first time that they've conceded 20 points. And it was the first time where they had an offense get totally hot. And Minta had to make some of those decisions. What do I do on a fourth down play call. The opposition are just going for it because they need to score lots of points. What did you think about those plays? There were two of them. There's the goal line play, the touchdown to Jamar Chase on fourth down. Then there was the fourth and two from the Chargers 43, and they decide to throw a long bomb to T. Higgins on a sluggo route, touchdown. What are you seeing? Something from for Jesse to learn from? Any issues there?
The thing that concerned me was Jesse Taylor in the slot on T. Higgins there, but mainly the second help from Elijah Molden. And he's done this a couple of times now where he just gets a little bit too aggressive, coming, sneaking up a little too far. And you put it quite succinctly offline that you're sort of, he's playing for that sticks route, right? You know, slant in, something like that, and just gets caught in, just gets sucked way too far in. So that sluggo just opens the field. Jasir doesn't have the speed to go with him. Really flattening experience. That, I think they went 70 yards, 70 yards, 50 yards for those three touchdowns, something like that. It was 180 odd yards within three drives that really kind of, yeah, put us all on our ass. But, you know, to Jesse's credit, I think they went a couple of punts and a couple of missed field goals after that. So there was obviously a little bit of, I don't know, change, adjustment from Minter and from the defense. They kind of just swiveled their head back on and managed to get the job done. So a little bit of self-correcting in game. But yeah, it was definitely a shock. We did predict that the Bengals would score the most that the Chargers have conceded this year. I think it's just a matter of, you know, that kind of offense when you've got the quarterback with the leading yards, leading touchdown reception, leading receiving yard receiver. T. Higgins is back. Chase Brown's pretty electric, both with the, you know, carrying the ball and in the receiving game as well. So we definitely had our hands full. I think it was a really commendable effort to, except for that little purple patch, you know, at the end of the third and the start of the fourth, on the whole, it was a really good defensive game.
And Jack offline, I don't know if he was quite embodying the, you know, believe and trust the process that he likes to spruik on the airwaves. I thought the difference was, even though, like, these were great learning moments, probably a poor decision on fourth and goal to have Chase one-on-one in man coverage, all out blitz. Now, one of our former player listeners tried to say that Gilman might have blitzed when he shouldn't have. Maybe he should have seen the running back was in protection and decided not to blitz and protect that slant. But we don't know what the play call is. It looked like an all-out blitz with man coverage underneath. That's a recipe for disaster, leaving Chase one-on-one with a fifth-round rookie. So let's...
I was just going to say, yeah, there are a few instances where we elected to go the blitz, left it on man coverage at the back, and got exposed. Like, it is still Christian Fulton, you could tell he's still kind of recovering from that hamstring injury, doesn't trust it fully, so he was a bit grabby, gave away a few penalties there. Hopefully he can work that out of his game when he gets, you know, his body feeling a little bit better. But other than that, like, it's a pretty young DB group as far as the outside corners go.
Of course,
and experience with Jasir Taylor, so it's incredibly impressive when you look at it that way.
For sure. And I'd rather they take their lumps in a game like this when they still win than in a loss. They'll still take all of these lessons. They've still got seven games left. They can take these lessons, learn from them. And I never really got the feeling that there was chaos on the defensive side of the ball. Yes, the Bengals stepped up, but you weren't seeing many missed tackles. There might have been a missed sack opportunity or two, or major blown coverages. I thought it was just really good coaching, big boulders on Zach Taylor to throw a 40 air yard pass on fourth and two. I mean, sometimes you just tip your cap and say, okay, well played, sir. Well played, sir. But Jack was losing it on the Facebook messenger chat we have going on. He was like, this is Jacksonville again. Never seen anything like this. It's the same old Chargers. May or may not have had a few choice words to say in response, but all's fair in love and war, and the Chargers live to fight another day, 7-3. So other than that, on the defense, man, what else did you see? Maybe you talk a bit about Derwin James. What did you think about Derwin's game in this one?
I think it was a lot better than, you know, just looking at the PFF scores for starters. It's kind of everywhere. Helped out with that sack with Tooley. Ferocious. Awesome play on the PBU to break up the Hail Mary. You know, it's just things like that that add up from start to finish, playing a complete game. Really impressive. So for all the knocks that he's been copping, yeah, that was close to one of his best for mine. What do you think?
I basically think the same. I mean, if you're looking for Derwin James to play like the best safety in the NFL, which is really how he's being played, to be Kyle Hamilton, have incredible interceptions, strip sacks, force fumbles, we're not seeing that from him. So I think it's fair to say on field he's not playing to the level of that contract, but he's also being asked to do more than your standard safety. He is predominantly playing in the slot as a big slot in the nickel package. He's playing a lot of hybrid linebacker when they have six DBs on the field. He's not really deep center field very often. So this week he had 49 snaps in the slot. So it's kind of difficult to view him as a traditional safety when he still is doing a lot of different things. And what you can't value, and this is definitely channeling Jack, is the je ne sais quoi, the intangible. The fact that Harbaugh says he's the fiercest competitor I've ever seen, period. He's the leader. He's the heart and soul of the defense. So maybe the defense is playing this well because they have Derwin James there, who's an eraser, and opposition play callers have to prepare for him, and he's just having that intangible effect, not only what he's doing on the field, perhaps.
Very well. Very good way of putting it, to be honest. Yeah, doing a lot. You know, he's of that true DB mold, not a cornerback, not a safety, not a nickel, not a linebacker. He's a DB Swiss Army knife. And I think he's one of those guys like Khalil Mack, when he's in the lineup or he's doing the cheeky little claps on the sideline.
so
they elevate the level of play from the others. And now that they've got the, you know, the defensive maestro and Jesse Minter, there's a lot more want and resolve from the outfit, and it's bloody exciting to see.
But let's be clear, when you get Burrow in your hands, fucking sack him. Don't do that. Don't do that. That's ever
the,
again.
The one knock, like, yeah.
With 5 minutes left, finish the play.
Yeah.
But probably his best game for the year, so hopefully something he can build on.
Yeah, for sure. All right, mate. Just before we move on to our awards, praise to JK Scott. Sent him booming. That was good. You know, I'm very... very on knife's edge with JK. Sometimes he has great games. Other times he kicks the ball shorter than I would. So pay me millions of dollars. How about that? yeah, look. It's a good game from JK Scott. Special teams all round. And a special shout out as well. Shaq Quarterman laid one of the biggest hits on a punt return on Irwin I think I've ever seen.
Smacked the that shit out of him.
Oh, baby. And wasn't he happy about it? That's like, you know, even if it gets him a sniff of a depth role playing linebacker, which, you know, we'll get into the injuries heading into week 12, but there's a spot there. So
this has been happening all year, man. Whether it's Simi Fehoko or Stone Smart or AJ Finley, this special teams unit just finds someone each week to make an impact. So again, we talk about it almost every week on the show, but you can almost tie the turnaround of this franchise to the arrival of Ryan Ficken in certain parts, because you lift your special teams up. It lifts the floor of your whole team. I don't want to offend any Green Bay fans out there, Dan, but teams where your special teams are perennial cellar dwellers, it's going to kill you in a playoff game. You're going to miss that field goal. You're going to shank that punt. You're going to have a blocked field goal. You're going to give up a fake pass. Not with this team, and that's why I think. In fact, before we go to the awards, I'll ask you a question. Why not put the rose-colored glasses on, with the Chargers being 7-3? Talk to me, buddy. Is this roster capable of contending for a Super Bowl, standing right here and right now?
I will answer that question after the next four games, because so far what I've seen has been
I'll choose when you answer the question. Is this... No, you're the host. You're the host. Go on.
Well, look, the reality is we've played a lot of pretty average teams. And we have a flattering record because we've played cellar dwellers. And...
Or are they cellar dwellers because they've played us?
Yeah, let's go with that. Sure. I don't think that changes anything. I don't think we're, you know, that detrimental every any given Sunday, right, man? So, look, we've got a big test ahead of us over the next few weeks. So that will be the true determining factor for me, believing that this is, you know, I'm just loving what it is day by day after the last 3 years was a whole lot of talk and, you know, not much sort of return. Last year was a complete disaster. There was a lot of excitement at the start of this year. And already, you know, Jim Harbaugh is putting his effect on the team and the culture of the entire organization. So we got more listeners. It's great.
Now look who's embodying the Harbaugh mantra with a day-by-day nonsense. And you know when I ask a question, it's because I want to answer it myself, man.
I think... I like how you answered that. This is how I would have answered it differently.
What I'd say and why I would have almost been more aggressive at the trade deadline or thought about it, it ain't every year where you have the number one scoring defense and a top five quarterback in the NFL. To me, that means you are necessarily in with a shot. And I know people will say the wide receiving...
And a good special teams.
And a good special teams. So, and a relative, let's call it, right now, it's a relatively healthy roster. So right now, and injury luck does play its role later in the season. For now, most of the key players have remained healthy. Everyone listening, touch wood. If you're at work, touch your hard hat, do whatever. Knock on wood if you're with me. Just do something. Because we need to...
A wooden hard hat.
I didn't say the hard hat's made of wood. I said knock on your workbench. Knock on your wood. Or your Glockenspiel. I don't know where you're working, guys.
Enough.
I really believe it. You see what Mahomes has done. Yes, he's got Kelsey, but a lot of the time that's a motley crew of receivers, man. And Brady did it with these guys like Chris Hogan and Danny Amendola. And at the time we thought they sounded good, but are they that different to Josh Palmer and QJ and Ladd McConkey? If you've got a good O-line, which we're starting to develop, and Justin Herbert, the number one defense and a great head coach, we are in this season, listeners. We are in it. But let's check back in a few weeks, as you said.
Yeah. Don't want to get too far ahead of myself. Won't even mention that, you know, depending on what resource you read, Chargers are 95-93% chance of making the playoffs. I don't even want to let that creep in because that would just be another Charge of the Season kind of tropey storyline. So I'll leave that alone. We'll let the business do the talking over the next few weeks. All right, mate, your Yeah Nah award for this week, please.
Well, this week I don't want to give a Yeah Nah to anyone who played on the field because it was such a stirring and resounding victory. So I'm going to take it to our head coach last year because, interestingly, Dayon Henley had his birthday the other day. And listeners will remember that after Staley was fired, Chris Rimm from ESPN published an article talking about the fractured locker room. One of the points made in the story was on a certain day, it was two players' birthdays, and Staley had wished happy birthday to one, but had not wished happy birthday to Dayon Henley. And I think at the time, at least I had said, I mean, if this was your big hit piece and that's the best bit of evidence you've been able to find from your investigative reporting.
Chris Rimm or Daniel Popper?
I think it was Rimm. Rimm job. But I thought that was a bit of a lame story. However, maybe not. Dayon Henley, he tweeted a text message he received from Coach Harbaugh on his birthday. You think Harbaugh doesn't know what's up? Harbaugh's a smart cookie. Don't be fooled by the faux senility in press conferences. He has sent a lengthy epistle to Henley. Happy birthday, man. Seize the day. Enthusiasm. Henley's posted it on Twitter. Went from no happy birthday to endless happy birthday. I love Bolt fam. Always had my back. So that says all you need to know. Sometimes perception is reality. So last year, Henley as a drafted player by Staley was a year. This year, Staley's gone. Henley digs the boot in and says, nah, Brandon. So he gets the Yeah Nah award for this week.
Right on. Nah, yeah, for me. I've got two. First, nah, yeah, goes to the smiling mini assassin. I can't stop talking about this guy. I love him. He went down with what looked like a stinger, some kind of shoulder injury on an early catch. Took a little time off the field. Oh, no, not Laddie. Came back instrumental in the final drive. It's his second 100-yard game in his short career. Highest in terms of yardage with 123 from six catches. Lad McConkey. Just keep going, man. You're a superstar. And the second one, bit cheeky here. To the money man, Evan McPherson. Good from 26 and 27 in the first half. Three PATs. Then from about the 8-minute mark of the fourth quarter, he just totally shit the bed. Missing from 48 and 51. Thank you very much.
We did two front-on-front hugs in the last quarter, and I reckon each one was the McPherson missed field goal.
Yeah.
Felt very good.
Yeah, that was so good. All right, 11's in the books. We move on to week 12. Unless you've got anything else you want to jump
in. I've got one thing to say. Usually we have the teachable moment here where Jack thrills us with something very rare from the history books. And at least five listeners very nicely asked me about the name of my daughter, Imogen, and they'd never heard of the name and how do you pronounce it. So very quickly, only 30 seconds worth, Imogen's a Celtic name. It comes from the Celtic word Inigan, which means maiden or daughter. And the name first appeared around the late 1500s. Shakespeare, in one of his plays, Much Ado About Nothing, had a character called Inigan. And then 10 years later, Shakespeare either refined the name or it was mistranscribed in his play Cymbeline and it became Imogen, I-M-O-G-E-N. And us being Australians, we cannot help ourselves but shorten or abbreviate things. So I really liked, my wife and I really liked that Imogen becomes Immy or Im, and that's the name. So thanks everyone for the really kind words. That many people reached out. It was really heartening. I know you thanked them for me last week, but just I want to take a moment to say my wife and I thank you very, very much, and we appreciate all of the kind words and well wishes.
Dad dismissed.
Class dismissed.
All right, I had to jump in there with that. I spent the whole time thinking
Brought to you by Will Shakespeare.
Willie S. All right, week 12, Ravens. Just touching on the Chargers. Not all is peachy from the win against the Bengals. Cam Hart ruled out in the second half with concussion after I said he tallied five tackles, two pass deflections. Now, there's like a five-stage concussion protocol, so he's got some hoops to jump through. Even if it's not that bad, he's still got to be able to build up, prove to the coaching staff, an outside neurological specialist and all that before he can even return to training. So I think the guys had today off. In preparation of day's break ahead of Monday Night Football. But yeah, it's looking a little bleak there. What else is bleak? Denzel Perryman leaving the game with a groin injury. He's considered week to week and is already seeking a second opinion on the groin injury. So yeah.
You haven't received any requests, Dr. Prof?
No, thankfully not. Some people just know that ain't me. But a really, you know, saddening outlook, I guess, for the next little while. Week to week is not a great prognosis for a guy who's, like we've said at the top of the show, he's been a superstar and a pivotal part of this Minter defense. So
and it's a bad week for him to miss.
Shock. Couldn't be a worse week to miss. Because we'll get into it. But look, the Ravens bleed blood. They came a little unstuck this Sunday against their North rivals, the Pittsburgh Steelers, held captive to a dominant defensive display, 18-16. A heroic interception from Peyton Wilson, a two-point stop, forcing Derrick Henry to fumble the ball, his first one in, I think, 538 touches. Justin Tucker failing again by foot. Too much kiss and Evan McPherson the night before, hey? Missing two field goals. His
too
tally,
much kissing.
His tally up to six on the season now. His worst effort was seven misses way back in 2015. So is the greatest kicker in NFL history on the decline. Look, Lamar Jackson kind of scrambled a bit. He went 5 of 14 on pass attempts greater than 10 yards. Had the aforementioned interception. 8 of 10, though, in short intermediate throws over the middle of the field. So he generated 110 of his 207 yards in that part of the field. So, you know, there's definite factors to be paying attention to. Let's go some headlines heading into the game, mate.
Let's do it. And you set me up beautifully. Mine is Dicker Tuck between legs. As you said, Justin Tucker, the greatest of all time. He is the GOAT. He's 16 of 22 this year, and you can see it etched on his face. He's lost confidence. Meanwhile, the young Cameron Dicker is starting to find range again after smoking that 51-yard field goal with that beautiful draw last week. So just watch that. In these games we saw last week, it was almost determinative. Two missed field goals from the Bengals. That turns the game potentially. We were perfect. So let's keep an eye out on this again this week. Special teams focus once more against the Ravens.
Yeah, well put. What's interesting as well, Justin Tucker was blaming the surface. Well, I believe Chris Boswell went 6 of 6 and recorded the Steelers' second victory of the year purely scoring.
So what was the complaint? Like, what was wrong with the surface? Too grassy for you, Justin?
Yeah. Yeah, something like that. All right, for me, dire straits for the Chargers linebacking group. Henley is a man possessed across the intermediate of the field. But without Denzel, will it be Troy Dye who has his number called and asked to do a little bit more than flash some of his athleticism as he takes on the starting role next to Dyan? Nick Neiman can pinch hit, but since his IR return, he looks to be a pure special teamer. Only 9 defensive snaps played this year. Maybe a Shaq Quarterman. Who knows who else will step up and fill the void of the human missile Perryman.
I'll go one more headline. Give Zay his flowers, but the main man is Bateman. Shocking.
How many beers have you had?
I need an editor. So Zay Flowers is the name everyone will be focusing on because I think he's top 10 in the league in receiving yards, and he's a very good player. But watching the Ravens recently, it is Rashod Bateman who is starting to come into his own. He's eclipsed 500 yards receiving himself. 4 touchdowns. I thought he was the most dangerous player against the Steelers. So you just need to be careful. Don't focus too much. I mean, you'll have to focus on Flowers in the slot, but if Cam Hart can't get up, I hope Fulton really sticks true to Bateman because he's a deadly player.
Yeah, well put. Can we get some Mark Morrison up in this place? Return of the Mac is going to be pivotal for Minter's defense, containing the setting the edge and containing both Lamar Jackson, both trying to minimize Derrick Henry as well, Justice Hill. You know, they've got such a potent attack, as you said, in the air and on the ground. It's animalistic. Derrick Henry, 12 touchdowns, leading the league. We've got to make that impact on Lamar Jackson. And, you know, an extra experienced body just keeps Thule fresh, keeps Dupree fresh, keeps Bosa fresh. It all paves a good path for the team.
Flipping it to the other side of the field, don't be afraid of these Ravens corners, TDU crew. They are better on paper, I think, than they are in practice. So they do have Nate Wiggins, Brandon Stevens, Marlon Humphrey, Tre'Davious White. That sounds really good, but they've given up collectively the most passing yards in the NFL, over 3,000, the 3rd most touchdowns. So with Herbert on a heater, I expect them to continue to attack deep through the air often, because up front, the Ravens are stingy, man. In terms of yards per rush allowed, they're number 1 in the NFL on defense. In terms of yards per rush gained on offense, they're number 1 in the NFL. And it might surprise you, listeners, to know that the Chargers' defense in yards per attempt allowed a 23rd. So they look good against the run, but actually down by down, they are allowing a bit. And our offense, for all the talk about running the ball, we're 20th in yards per attempt. So this might not be a game to try win in the trenches because they're really good in that area. On the outside is where I would be attacking, as Greg Roman.
Yeah, you've pinched on me notes, mate. Lowest per carry with 3.4 yards per attempt. It's an incredibly stingy defense. And a couple of guys who are contributing to that, Roquan Smith and his buddies Trenton Simpson and Malik Harrison as fellow linebackers. Smith, 24 stops in the run game. But yeah, it is that passing game that...
Should say, Roquan Smith under an injury cloud, hamstring against the Steelers.
Oh, nice.
John Harbaugh today said, didn't want to give an update. We'll see how he is later in the week, but hamstrings, they're tricky business, so it could be Malik Harrison actually playing next to Trenton Simpson, the young buck.
There you go.
Let's hope so.
Good intel. It's that coverage that, you know, the only sort of thing on any part of the Ravens team that you can really frown at. They've allowed the most yards. They have had the most attempts, pass attempts against them. But, you know, maybe that's teams sort of going, well, we can't really run the ball up the middle, so we'll throw at guys like Marlon Humphrey, who's netted 5 of the team's 7 interceptions. He's had 6 pass breakups. Kyle Hamilton, complete freak. So there are avenues outside of those kind of guys with the corners that you mentioned before.
I think that almost sums it up. I mean, we'll be seeing our old friend. I liked Kyle Van Noy as a Charger, and he's leading their team on sacks, so nothing but good vibes towards him, just not this week. And look, you know what to expect when you play the Ravens. They rarely beat themselves. I mean, I know last week they had 12 penalties, but they're a very well-coached, Harbaugh-coached football team that is smash mouth and tough, and it's going to be a fantastic game. Unless you've got anything else to add, I'm going to move to the result prediction. I'm going to ride this high. So I'm going to say, despite my preseason prediction, the Chargers on Monday Night Football go 27-24 in another very close game. This time it will be Dicker hitting a field goal late to win. And John Harbaugh, who has to date a 2-0 record against his brother, Jim will get his first back. And hopefully there'll be another sometime in the future when it matters in January.
Nice one. I am going the other way. John takes the three-nil lead in the Harbro matchups, having defeated Jim in 2011 and in Super Bowl 47 in 2013. Chargers defense just stretched out a little bit against the Cardinals when you look at a hypermobile QB. All of Kyler Murray's big plays were on his legs. Without Perryman, I think it's going to be a real struggle to contain Lamar's dual threat ability. If Cam Hart doesn't get up, like we've said, Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman. We haven't even spoken about Isaiah Likely and Mark Andrews.
That'll be Derwin. So Derwin, yeah. He raised Mike Gesicki. Really, Likely is their biggest danger these days. Mark Andrews is a bit long in the tooth, but we should have mentioned him. So I'm glad you did at the end.
Since he's kind of come good after the Achilles that ended his season last year, he scored 5 touchdowns. So he sort of took over. Likely started off really well at the start of the year, but now that Mark Andrews is sort of flowing, he's stepped up a little bit. Yeah, look, and Derrick Henry, man. I'm going 24-21 to the Ravens, but I really hope I'm wrong. I think that's the first thing we've disagreed on tonight. It's nice.
Yep.
All right, a couple of NFL headlines before we wrap up tonight's show. Kick us off.
Peterson, hot, then not. Very interesting. You rarely see this take place. So Doug Peterson wins the Super Bowl with the Eagles. Then somewhat mysteriously, the team totally loses it. The offense seems vanilla, insipid. They can't move the ball. There's talk about player disharmony, and he's suddenly out the door. But we know the Philadelphia fan base can be quite volatile. We're seeing the same story play out in a different place. They looked so hot 2 years ago, where he steams in, takes over from Urban Meyer, who was a steaming turd. And Peterson took that team with Trevor Lawrence, brings them and kicks our ass in the wild card round, takes it to Kansas City in the divisional round just 2 years later. And this is why we love this sport. It's just so evenly keeled that things change year on year. Lions pumped them 52-6, total embarrassment. The team's stuffed. He's a lame duck. He's a dead man walking, and it's going to happen again. So sometimes things can just be hot one day, cold the next. That's the NFL. So Doug Peterson, hot, they're not.
You're fast and loose tonight. I'm feeling pretty jovial. It's another week of comical press conference retorts. So I'm just going to touch on a couple. One that really speaks volumes to this operator, Mike McDaniel. You know, it's been a pretty rough trot for the Dolphins this year with Tua's injury. But he came out and said, winning feels a lot better than losing. So I think we're going to keep trying to do that. Just classic vape on the sidelines gear from Mike McDaniel. And another one, Russell Wilson, when asked about how he feels about where Pittsburgh are sitting, he says, oh, we got what, a two-game lead, right? Yeah, 1.5 games, Russ. Ah, that's two, round up. Might actually be the funniest thing Russell Wilson's ever said.
Wild.
So, yeah, credit. Look, I'm shocked by what the Steelers have been able to do with that patchwork kind of Wilson Fields QB situation. George Pickens still fighting random cornerbacks, just doing ludicrous stuff, but that defense is electric and Mike Tomlin just can't lose.
When you're unlimited, you don't believe in whole numbers. He's just made up his totally new own numeric code, dangerous. I want to do one more actually, because I love to call out what I think is bad clock management, game management, coaching. And it's hard to overlook what's happening in Chicago at the minute. And Kyle Brandt on Good Morning Football did a better job than I could. But the Hail Mary play against the Commanders was not actually the worst play, or maybe it was as bad as the play before, where the Bears just allowed a 25-yard completion to allow them to be in range to attempt the Hail Mary. Well, another week and another opportunity goes begging. Caleb Williams is playing really well. You've got the Packers on the fence, but what do? You get into field goal range, and with about 45 seconds left on the clock, you decide, close enough is good enough. We'll run a play, and then we'll let the clock roll down, and we'll take a field goal from 46 yards out. When are they going to learn not to do that? Get as close as you possibly can, and you won't end up with this result with a blocked field goal. So bad luck. The bad news Bears continue to be bad news. I think Eberflus will be joining Doug Peterson as an assistant somewhere in the NFL or elsewhere next year before the year's done.
Yeah, I think you're right. Oh, I had such a good quip about, you know, doing Hail Mary pass breakup and not doing a Tyrique Stevenson. And just missed my
shot. You got
shot.
It in there. You got it in there.
Forced it in there. Last one for me before we wrap it up. I can't not do this segment without having a swipe. Jake Paul, he's achieved something the Dallas Cowboys have not in 2024. He won something at AT&T Stadium. They've not won at home in 2024. Demoralized again on Monday Night Football by the Houston Texans. 3-7, three wins on the road, and they joined their divisional struggling counterparts, the New York Giants, as the only teams without a home win this season. But just retract, just pull in the camera back a little bit, the lens out. You see that the Giants' last home win was on January 7th of this year. The Cowboys haven't won a game at home since December 30, 2023. So, it's so good to watch the Cowboys just flail about. Cooper rushes him. Just keep him on. Burn the whole joint to the ground. Don't put blinds in.
Cooper rushes him. No one has said that ever.
I think that'll do us, mate. Thanks all for listening, guys. Love to hear your thoughts, comments on the Ravens game ahead. Athira, I'm looking at you. Till then,
how many
we'll
yards for JK?
305 touchdowns.
Yes!
Straight from the horse's mouth. Thanks for joining us, guys. Hope for a big win on Monday Night Football. We'll catch you next week on Thunder Down Under. See ya.
Later, governors.
Firing, he's got Floyd turning, got it, zigzag, 10, 5, high step, touchdown, San Diego!
Good night to all!